into the studio. Chief McNutt from the Palmer Fire Department. Have you been worrying about emergency?
We were there for a little bit. You probably read the news story where there was the line of fires down the New Bogard Road there. And I did see that the fire danger was listed as high on the forestry warning boards they have out by the highway. But this rain the past 2 days is definitely going to help. Always need to be vigilant, though, and burn safely and with the proper permits. But the rain does give a little relief to us in this instance.
Okay. Well, yeah, this morning, looking out there, it's damp. We're talking about a Friday, in this case, a Friday morning. Things are wet, not soaking necessarily, but a nice little gentle rain that has come down.
Correct. Yeah, we had those fires earlier the last week, and everybody was walking around on their lawns and ground, and it's nice and mushy and wet underneath, but the grasses and everything on top was dry as could be from the winds, so that it was burning right across the top.
Okay, yeah, and there have been a number of examples. I've in preparation for this morning, I glanced through, sifted through the various reports of, and pictures, interestingly enough, of different places where fires have either in the past been active or at the present. I saw one interesting picture as ground was being burned to improve the production of whatever crop was planted there.
Yes, and actually we have had fires assisted it. We've used it as a training exercise,
right?
But with the muskox farm in the past, because there is a, from my understanding, a certain parasite that lives up there.
Uh-huh.
And the only way to get rid of it is to burn it off. So they will section off certain sections of the field to burn off for the muskox farm. And we will go and we use it as a training exercise for us because it's a nice controlled environment. We're not worried about it getting out of control. We're already there. We have the state forestry officers come out there with us to teach us methods and practices and things to improve our ability to put the fire out. But that's one of those where we're not actually putting it completely out because we have to let it do its job as well.
Oh, sure. Control.
Correct.
Right. Control fire. Well, I noticed also, having gone by the airport, the parking lot at the north end of the airport now has a lot of vehicles in it.
Absolutely. Forestry stood up. Their first day was April 1st. That's also the first day that you're required to have a burn permit, no matter whether you're inside or outside of the city.
Okay.
They are required April 1st through August 31st. And so please, if you have any interest of doing any type of burning, go online to their website and research what you need to have available. If you're doing just the very basic fires that are what we consider a recreational fire, those permits you can print right off their website.
Okay.
If you're doing anything like of a land clearing method where you're chopping down brush and going to be burning in piles, that's something that you need to work with them, schedule for them to come out and do an inspection.
Oh, an inspection.
Yes.
Ah.
Yeah. And now there is a certain size for that. And unfortunately, right now, off the top of my mind, I can't remember what that size is. But they do come out. They have their prevention officers come out and make sure that everything's going to be safe so you don't get yourself into trouble and that fire gets uncontrolled. It gets away from you and then burns into your neighbor's property.
And they respond pretty quickly as you're prepping to do something like that?
They do pretty good. There are, like everything, limited resources.
Sure.
So it's one of those, if I wouldn't try and contact them the day you plan to do it, I would get it ready, follow the guidelines, contact their office ahead of time to make sure that they've got plenty of time to get out to see you.
Well, I'm sure many people have been following something. We're not going to try to get into the weeds, so to speak, about the Sockeye fire, but I can't help but notice that one of the articles describing the events there ran through the question of whether a couple that had been accused of beginning, essentially starting the fire, had a burn permit, et cetera. And there seems to be no disagreement that they had failed to do that.
From what I've read in the media, that sounds correct. They did not have one.
Uh-huh. So now the question is, I suppose, going beyond that, and that's what the trial will hope to bring out, is whether not having it was one thing, but whether, in fact, what they did was the cause of the fire or not.
Correct. Yeah, that will definitely be one of those cases everybody will be watching for quite a while.
But I would guess that if someone, if just looking ahead and thinking about it, if someone had the permit, had an inspection, had gone through that process, they might be in a better position to defend themselves against accusations.
Well, absolutely. And usually with the visits for the inspections, that'll alleviate the whole problem of the fire getting out of control.
Right.
We do the same thing here inside the city limits of Palmer. We have permits that are required. Ours are required year-round, but we have two styles. We have a recreational, which is be like your little campfire, 3x3 fire. You're going to cook hot dogs, marshmallows, things like that. And then we have a larger Class ABC permit, but you must have 2 acres or more to get one of those permits. We'll come out. We'll do an inspection, make sure everything's safe. You've got the proper clearances. You've got safeties in place. You completely understand how it needs to happen. It has to be in attendance at all time. And by doing these inspections, my belief is that it will cure a lot of those problems because you have a person doing the action that's paying attention and has all of the proper protections there.
Right, right. Well, hopefully this season will not will be a record low in the number of wildfires that are out there. That would be nice to see rather than the other kind of
record. Yes, it is always nice to see.
Okay. So now we come back to the fact that not all fires are wild land fires. There are fires that happen in the city. I was just thinking, how many fires in a year are there that are structure fires in the city of Palmer?
Oh, it varies. some years there's more than others. I'm off the top of my head. I'm thinking last year we probably had less than 20 that I could think of, inside the city limits of Palmer. Now some of those fire calls are structures. Of course, we get the false alarms, the CO alarms, all those calls to buildings as well. But as far as structure fires actually go, there was, I believe, less than 20 and maybe even less than that.
Okay. So when we talk about alarms, I know I've just about completed, since our last conversation, installing the 8 new smoke detectors in our house. And I've discovered that while some of them, well, it was interesting because as we looked, as technology advances, connectors change. And the simple replacement where you pull out the connector and plug it into the new one is not as easy if the two connectors are different.
Yes. Most of them are getting fairly universal.
Right.
But you do have some where it's the much older home going to the newer home. The good thing is it's fairly simple. I actually, just like you, finished changing out my last one the other day at the home, and it wasn't too bad. I just had to find the wire crimpers to get
right. The strip. I've got it down now.
Yep, I do too. make sure the battery was good, and then hooked it up, and it should be good from here on out. I can just think off the top of my head. Last week, I had two homes that were in the same boat. Their fire alarms were going off.
Mm-hmm.
They could not find any smoke, could not find any fire in their home. Called the fire department. I responded out there, and same thing was there. The smoke detectors were over almost 15 years old.
Right.
And so once I removed the one that was given the warning flash, everything quit. We did another walkthrough just to make sure there was nothing. There was nothing. And it was, they aged out.
Time to replace. Right, right. And of course, since the cycle seems to be for many of them 10 years,
Yeah, we usually say 7 to 10, right. Especially around here in the Palmer area close to the river. The silt is not a friend of the detectors, sure. So it may be a little sooner than later. But definitely look at those detectors once a year, pull them down. If nothing else, make sure and take a vacuum. That will even help a little bit. They build up with dust, and then they get false readings. So take your vacuum cleaner and sweep them off. My recommendation, again, is pull it down when you're changing the battery and check the date on the back. And if it looks like it's been 7 years or more, time to go replace.
Okay. So you have also, recently received some new equipment. Have you had a chance to use it, a new truck?
We've been training with it. Of course, we have to make sure that everybody is up to date on how it works because of the new technologies, things don't work the way they used to. And so we did have a representative from the manufacturer come up and give us 3 days of training on the new aerial truck. We'll have another one coming up here shortly to kind of go over it again with us. The way it works is they teach you how to use it. We go and use it. And then if we come up with more questions, they send a guy back up to answer those questions. Right. Because you're always undoubtedly going to find something you didn't think of during the initial training. So we're hoping to have that here in service in the next week or so. Both apparatus ready to go. It'll be a great enhancement to our abilities.
Okay.
With the capabilities that those will provide.
Okay. Now, I also know that there are many people that are associated with the fire department, volunteers, and so on. What's the status of your recruitment effort at the present time?
We're actually doing quite well. Of course, we always use more, but we just brought on about 5-6 new personnel here last month. We hire quarterly. Mm-hmm. So we got a big influx of people, which is nice. I've already heard of 2 more applications that have been turned in this past 2 weeks or so, which means that there's more interest in coming. Again, we're all volunteer, and so we're looking for more because every firefighter has a normal job, sure, as we call it, that they do during the daytime for their livelihood. And so the more people you can have, the better you can man up those trucks if the other people are at work or unable to respond.
Okay. Now, there's going to be a lot of construction at the airport, new runway put in. And I know you have some responsibility for responding out there at the airport itself.
Correct.
Has there been much of a history of response to fires that have happened at the airport?
In 8 years that I've been here, we've had very few responses. Most of the time, again, we've done some training burns out there for 2 reasons. One is, again, training for us. It gives us a chance in a controlled environment to practice, right. But it also helps with the bird mitigation for bird strikes against aircraft. So most of the time when we respond to a fire call at the airport, it's because we're doing a training exercise there and it has nothing to do with a problem. If we get calls to the airport, it's usually for some type of aircraft emergency. And even then, we've had very few. Off the top of my head, I can think of about 3 or 4 in 8 years that I've been here in Palmer now.
Oh, that's a good thing.
It's a very good thing, yeah. And they've been very minor incidents. 2 of them, actually, the aircraft weren't even flying. It was during one of our windstorm events, and it flipped the plane over. Really, as far as aircraft incidents,
it wanted to fly.
It was trying to fly on its own, but it was tied down, and then eventually the tie downs broke and it flipped.
Okay. Well, I'm reminded that we're also looking ahead. It is May, but August and the end of summer will be coming soon enough, and the Alaska State Fair begins. Do you you have a presence out there as well?
Correct. We are responsible for going out there along with the State Fire Marshal's office, and we inspect every vendor booth along those paths out there to make sure that they're meeting a basic fire safety code. They have extinguishers in place, proper electrical wiring. They're aware of what they need to do in an emergency. And that becomes pretty labor intensive. Most everybody's been to the fair and they see how many vendors are out there. We have to hit every booth to check in on them and make sure that things are okay. And I think the last count I had was we were hovering somewhere over 500.
Wow. Wow, that's a bunch. Okay. Now, speaking of new things, we have a very large, I'm guessing, the largest building in Palmer next to perhaps something at the Alaska State Fair, and that's the new Fred Meyer building.
Correct.
And I know when the store opened, you had some trucks on display out there.
We did.
One day. How have you had walkthroughs and understandings of that building in anticipation, if you should be called, how to approach it?
Before opening, the department did have a chance to go over and do a walkthrough of the building. So that was a good eye-opening experience to the personnel on where some of the major functions take place, such as sprinkler connections, electrical rooms. The good thing is the building is a large open space, so we don't have to worry about a whole lot of configuration, minus the shelving units. But the crews did get a chance to go over and take a look around. Periodically throughout the build, I went over myself just to check things out, how they were going along with the building inspector. And we were able to make recommendations or ask questions and then build our fire plans in preparation for a possible emergency at that location.
Okay. I know in the past there have been a variety of interactions, even some appearances in classes at various schools. Does the fire department have an outreach to the school district at the present time?
When requested, we do. I actually have one of my firefighters. She's kind of assigned as the public education person.
Okay.
She travels around to the schools. We just had her and another firefighter last Friday out at one of the schools. I believe it was Sherrod Elementary. But we do try to make it around as we can. Of course, we need to be alerted when it's time to go do so.
Sure.
We let them know that we're available. We can come and talk about fire safety, or we can talk about home safety a little bit, because we don't always deal with just fires. There's lots of chemicals under there that little ones can get into, and we talk about how to keep them safe from that. But we try to make it out there and see the children and talk to them about fire safety, which is over the years definitely shown a great help.
Yeah.
The calls are going down, which is good, and it makes them more aware. Past experiences for me, one of the things I can remember when I first started as a firefighter 20 years ago or so, I was doing a safety speech at a school. 3 years later, one of the kids in the class bumped into me and was telling me about the stuff that he had stopped because he saw when he remembered from my class. So it does show that they are paying attention and they do take what you say to heart and really work with that. So that was a good feeling.
Okay. So what I notice on the emblem on the shirt you're wearing reads Palmer Fire and Rescue. So we often talk about fire. Maybe a few words about the rescue app. Aspect.
The rescue side is going to take more with the working with the EMS department or something that, of course, is not on fire. Your car accidents, that would entail the rescue part. We show up and we may have to do what we call extrication. That's where we're going to take the jaws of life, cut the cars apart to remove a victim from a trapped vehicle. It can also lead to what we call off-road rescue. We have a hiker or somebody on Hatcher Pass or assistance with one of the other departments, maybe Jonesville Mine, where we have to take off-road vehicles such as four-wheelers or wintertime snow machines and go look for a lost individual to bring them back for medical attention. Or sometimes they're just flat lost. They're not hurt, but they're lost and they need help getting back out. As we've also been able to use rescue for things such as angle rescue. So it's like somebody's over an embankment or down, something like that. We have to get ropes out and get to them and get them back out. So rescue entails pretty much everything that's not on fire or dealing with a fire. Now, CO alarms, the carbon monoxide alarms, and those fall into a fire call because that requires us breathing apparatus, and you're going to the house, and part of the problem may be there is a fire causing the carbon monoxide. So that does not fall into the rescue.
I know in the past, very often, fire department personnel and the ambulance service have been cross-trained. Is that still happening, or to what degree?
I do have some personnel that are cross-trained, but we here at Palmer Fire and Rescue do not run EMS.
Right.
So they work for the Mat-Su Borough. But I do have firefighters under the department that work for both departments. So they are EMTs and they are firefighters.
Okay. Well, that brings us to probably the last set of questions. I know that by the target date of 1 July, the dispatch center is going to be changing over. From your perspective, what will be the change, if any, that would be noticed and or noticed by people who are calling into 911?
The biggest change, of course, is where the 911 calls will be answered.
Okay.
My experience here so far, they've always been managed at Palmer Police Department, the dispatch center. Of course, now they will be transferred over to the MATCOM dispatch center in Wasilla. So you're going to have different voices if you've ever called 911 before. They're going to be answering and talking to you. And other than that, we don't really know what to expect right now. We're hoping for the best and that we'll be able to continue services the way they were. It'll be definitely a change as far as how I call for assistance. I'm so used to calling our dispatch center is 9G base. We're going to have to use terminology now. So undoubtedly, I'm probably going to call the new dispatch center the old name a couple times. But we can get through that and won't be an issue.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So far, there's been a lot of people in putting a lot of work into it. And I also note that a number of the people who have been staffing the dispatch center here have moved over to the new dispatch center as well. So maybe some of the same voices will be heard.
Maybe some of the same voices will be heard. And the good thing is they will take that institutional knowledge with them. And hopefully it will help train some of the newer that have never done that type of before.
Okay. Well, Mike Malewski here. I've been talking with Chief McNutt from the Palmer Fire Department. I've asked a lot of questions. Are there any other things you'd like to say before we finish up?
Actually, I think this morning we were able to cover most of them with the start off of the wildland. Again, it's that time of season again, whether you're inside or outside the city, you are going to need some type of permit, whether it's from forestry outside the city or me inside the city. Please check those batteries again on your smoke alarms and CO alarms if you haven't done so. There's dates as well. We are always willing to help. So if you need assistance, give us a call. We can come out and give you recommendations of what needs to happen, and then you can go from there. Other than that, please stay careful. Summertime was upon us. If you're going out to do some recreation, make sure you got some type of communication. I stated before, rescue, one of the things we do is off-road. And if you're hurt or injured and need to get help, you want to make sure you've got that contact to get the services you need.
And these days, of course, the ubiquitous smartphone with increased cell phones, although there's still situations where you wouldn't have communication.
Correct. You get far enough back there. And
I can remember back in the day when not everybody had a phone with them all the time.
Correct.
And I'm not sure whether that is, it gives people an illusion of I can always call someone, or is it generally a positive thing to have or not?
It's both of those. It is a positive thing to have because the capabilities are so much greater. But again, it does give them that illusion that I've got this in my hand so I can contact anybody at any time. And that's not the truth. You get far enough back in some of those areas and those cell phone set receptions don't work at all. Yeah. If you've got a satellite phone, that's wonderful. But the cell phone is not always going to work everywhere in the valley.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Chief McNutt.
You're welcome.